Welcome back to Red Receipt, a podcast by Antidote, the email and SMS marketing agency by people who hate boring email. We do a deep dive into the how and why of brand building, from blueprints to launch day, customers as community, and the detours in between. Big lessons and easy listening. Joining us here on the podcast today is Shannon Davenport, the founder of Austin-based Esker Beauty, the new natural body care line to know about. After spending a decade in New York City as a trend forecaster, Shannon knew she wanted to create a brand with honesty and integrity at its cornerstones. In 2018, she founded Esker to make clean and safe products that elevate the way we take care of ourselves. We're super excited to have her here with us on the show and hope you guys enjoy.
Red Receipt. Red Receipt.
Well, I'd love to, yeah, just to kick things off, I'd love to just learn, kind of get an idea for your background before you launched the brand and then kind of the original idea that sparked launching the brand as well.
Yeah. So I worked for 12 years as a trend forecaster. That was actually what I wanted to do. I read about this job in like a careers book when I was like 21. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. Is that a real job? And I went to UC San Diego and majored in human development. But I wanted to do something creative, and I definitely wanted to leave California because I'm such a California born and bred person. So I wanted to spread my wings. So I went to New York and I enrolled in a program at FIT that basically was that I could Fashion Institute of Technology, which I found a program that was basically geared towards trend forecasting. And it is an industry. It is a real job. It's a very small industry and a very specialized job. But I got pretty lucky and I found an internship my first year doing the program. So I actually didn't even finish it because it was another BA and it was a lot of money to pay the out-of-state tuition. So I went into that straight away at like 22 or 23 and worked for one of the main agencies in New York that did trend consulting for a lot of the big fashion and lifestyle companies around the world. And I stayed there for a long time because when I started there, it was probably 10 or 20 people in a loft. And by the time I left, it was 250 people, you know, in six different international offices. So,
oh my gosh. What was that agency called?
It was called StyleSite. So it got acquired by WGSN, which is now kind of like the world's biggest trend forecasting service, especially in fashion. They do a lot of industries, but that's definitely where their strength is. And then later I went to work for another agency that did trend forecasting, but a little bit less apparel and fashion focused and more focused on like CPG companies and lifestyle companies and food companies. And that was started by the original guy who started WGSN. And that company was called Stylus, is called Stylus. And they're still around. So it's been it's a small little world. But all in all, I ended up working in trends for about 12 years.
It's funny. So my previous jobs, I worked for a company called VF. And VF owns Vans and Timberland and
a bunch of
lifestyle brands. Yeah, and I was in merchandising, so I would use WGSN pretty consistently.
Yeah, they're one of those clients that because they have so many brands across under their umbrella, they do use, you know, VF corporate and then all the different brands like use the different trend services. So yeah, I actually went to, there's a VF company in North Carolina.
I think it's their headquarters is in Greensboro, North Carolina. Yeah.
Yeah. I went there and gave a presentation once.
That's pretty funny. So then you worked in trend forecasting for 12 years, you said?
Yep. And I kind of towards the end, I was traveling all the time. I was working on the client and just doing custom research and doing presentations for internal teams, innovation teams and trend teams and, you know, sometimes design teams and merchandising teams, depending on what who the client was and what they did. And I was on a plane like every week and I was just getting anxiety and, you know, client life is really hard. Most of my clients were great, but of course not all of them were great. And then the ones that weren't great always were the ones that kind of stuck out in your mind. So I, you know, and the other thing is that, you know, I felt like I was talking about a lot of concepts, you know, coming down to kind of how the consumer is changing and what kind of disruption is happening in different industries and why. And a lot of it being led by like millennial consumers and Gen Z consumers. And I felt a lot like I was just like, I don't know, kind of just depended on the client. I can't say across the board, but, you know, it's tough to kind of bring those ideas into corporate contexts, especially with a lot of big legacy brands that aren't used to change. And sometimes I would feel like resentment for being the person talking about these new ideas. I can't tell you how many times I would talk about sustainability and people would just roll their eyes or be like, nobody's going to pay extra for this. And, you know, things like that, that were just like really disheartening. And, I got pretty burnt out on it after a while. And by nature of that job, you're constantly looking and saying like, hey, here's where industries are going. Here's where consumers are going. Here's a white space opportunity. Here's an interesting idea from an adjacent industry. And so you're trained to think that way. So of course, like, you're gonna have ideas that pop up when you're constantly doing that exercise.
And how would you, so when you're working at these agencies doing the trend forecasting work, how would you actually do the research on those industries and find the white space and trends in general? Was it specific techniques that you had worked on or sources that you had found, or is that like an industry-wide way of working?
The difference I think in like doing future trends versus like something like a Nielsen or a Mintel, which is kind of like reporting on what's going on currently, is you're using those metrics, those quantitative points in combination with more qualitative stuff, looking at, you know, companies who are the first to do things or looking at like early adopters in different areas and what types of things they're doing, or it's a mix of the quantitative and the qualitative. And every company I've ever worked with likes to, some people won't believe anything unless you give them quantitative data that like, hey, this category is rising, here's a projected, you know, CAGR for, you know, the next 5 years. And some clients don't mind at all if it's all just kind of conceptual and more about like changing consumer attitudes and generational shifts and things like that, that are a little bit harder to measure. So it's kind of a left brain, right brain exercise, because, you know, you can use data to a certain extent, but you can't use the data to, project the future. At least that's not what we were doing. Part of the task too is to kind of inspire your clients. So that's where, you know, you're kind of telling a story around around the topic that you're talking about, whether it's, you know, sustainability and Gen Z and the importance of like companies embracing sustainability, or it's something like the future of like outdoor dining or something like that, you know. It's really like across the board, a strange combination of queries. So it's kind of it's a little bit of that dance of just finding the way to tell the story between qualitative and quantitative insights.
And is that ultimately how you, or through that type of work, is that how you came up with the idea for launching your own brand?
Yeah, sort of. I think, well, two things happened. One, I was working with a lot of beauty companies, and I just was personally like a beauty fan, you know, kind of a beauty consumer. And I find that like with beauty people, there's people who are like really into beauty as like almost like a lifestyle category, skincare and beauty and wellness. And then there's people who also like participate in beauty, and they'll buy beauty products and have routines and products that they love, but they're not like kind of like a skincare or beauty enthusiast type. And so I was really into I definitely fell into the enthusiast category. And so I decided also, because I was feeling really jaded and I was feeling like unhealthy from being on planes and, you know, like drinking white wine at airports and getting home really tired and just kind of like, it was just kind of the definition of burnout, and working all the time and working nights and weekends and lots of travel. I felt like I needed to do something like inspiring or different, or just turn off that part of my brain. So I found a school, in New York in the East Village called the School of Aromatherapy. And it's run by this great woman who has been in natural beauty for like 20 years. And she developed a whole curriculum, and it was a nights and weekends class. So I enrolled in that, and I managed to find a window of time where I wasn't supposed to be traveling all the time. And I just really loved the course. It was all about plant-based ingredients and aromatherapy and essential oils, but from a very balanced perspective. And so that, just kind of being exposed to that, like a new modality of, you know, plants and the way that they work on your skin and, the chemistry of different plant properties, it kind of just like, once that whole world opened up to me, then my other side of my brain that was like, you know, okay, how do we apply like new concepts to this thing that I learned? It just kind of both came together. And then on a personal note, you know, I just loved, again, like I'm from California, I find a lot of solace in nature, and I've always just appreciated nature and was raised to appreciate nature. And so just the fact that it was plants and plant-based, and it just made me feel calm. So it was, yeah, it was just I probably wouldn't have started the company if I hadn't done that class. So it was, you know, having that inspiration at the time through the material that I was learning, and then, you know, just naturally using my business side of my mind to be like, oh, this is cool. Someone should do this with this. Someone should do this with this. And at the time, which has changed a little bit by now, but at the time, you know, it was like 4 years ago or something. There was very little, natural beauty was coming up and skincare was really coming up as a really interesting category, but I didn't see anything really specific for body care in that, market. And so that's kind of how the gears all got turning.
And once you had the idea and kind of the realization that there wasn't any as much in the space of body care, how did you go about developing the brand identity and then also the product?
So I did it super slowly, super cautiously. I have always been really mindful about, you know, living in New York and when you're young, it's hard and incredibly expensive. And so I couldn't just like quit my job and be like, guys, I'm going to start a brand. They'd be like, that's nice, but how are you going to pay your rent? So I basically just was like, I've been very conservative about not quitting my job and being able to support myself. And so I started tinkering around with formulas. Around that time, I moved in with my husband, which allowed me to start saving some money on rent, which was huge. It really is like really tough in New York. Even if you have a good job, a huge amount of your income goes to rent. And then he's a designer and an art director. And so, he thought it was a really cool idea. And so we kind of started really slowly, like one day a week, like just, you know, building this brand and me looking at packaging ideas I liked and formulation ideas that I had. And I found a contract manufacturer, started working with it that, specialized in naturals, and I started working with them. And honestly, it took forever for the first prototypes to launch. I mean, I didn't even talk to anybody about it. It was just something that I did for like a year, kind of quietly, and just continued to have my day job. And then I would say like maybe a year or a year and a half after we just taught ourselves how to do all of it. We, you know, Greg is a really good designer and he knows how to, I mean, his specialty is, art direction, but he went to RISD and he loves making stuff and it in all different mediums. So together, you know, we designed all of the packaging. We found people, to produce it for us. We seriously just pulled it all together really scrappily. We paid somebody $500 to set up a designer that Greg knew. He also was an adjunct professor at Parsons for a long time in design, so he knows a lot of great designers, young designers that are like for helping with something like this. And then we were in LA and we kind of soft launched it, and it was right around the time when I was about to have my baby. And I didn't want to quit my job because I needed that security. It was just like too much craziness for me at the same time. So I stayed working, had my baby, took my maternity leave, kept kind of working on it in the background. And then it was like things started to happen that made it feel like it was a viable company. Cause again, I didn't want to, especially with a young baby, I didn't want to just quit. Cause I'm now less so, but I was very risk averse before. And then like, you know, out of nowhere, Anthropology, we launched at a few wholesale boutiques with friends of mine and people that I knew. And then, you know, we like randomly got a cold email from Anthropology saying, hey, we want to pick up the brand. So I was waiting for real things like that to show me that this was a viable business before I actually took the plunge. So it's not as like sexy and exciting as a founder story, as some of the founder stories where it's like, I had this idea and then just boom, it came together. It was definitely more of a slow burn, but I feel like that's also a lot of people's reality, is to ease your way into something and try to hustle. And everybody always says like, don't quit your day job until you have to. And I very much followed that to a T, and it's hard because, you know, it's stressful and time consuming and, nerve wracking, but, you know, it's the reality of bootstrapping and all of that.
So you've bootstrapped the business from the beginning.
Yeah.
Did you focus in the early days on direct consumer, or was it more split between wholesale and online and just finding what worked?
We didn't focus on direct to consumer at all in the beginning. because we didn't have any capital. So I basically had, you know, a certain amount of money that I had saved up from working, and I didn't know anything about D2C, and I was scared of it because, you know, you really have to know what you're doing before you get in there and start spending ad dollars. And I did have connections, you know, just through working in fashion and being in New York and LA, I had connections to the retail space. And so for me, it was a very low risk way to get the business rolling, without shelling out, aside from inventory, without shelling out too much cash, because I just didn't have any cash to burn for marketing. So it was a very organic start. And we actually had some really good success with wholesale early on. Goop was one of our first stores that picked us up. They picked us up like right after I had my baby, and that was like, you know, pretty exciting. And we didn't have any PR, we didn't have any digital sales or ads or anything. It was all just kind of old school wholesale. And that just started slowly building naturally. And so it really wasn't until like, I think we got a digital agency March of last year, and that was when we finally started to kind of find our way in direct sales. When you don't have, when every dollar counts and you're super bootstrapped, it's like a wholesale relationship is one that you can calculate and you can financially plan for. Whereas, you know, the world of D2C was like something to me that seemed like something that brands did who won out, got capital, and then went to market. And I wasn't in that position, and I wasn't even remotely prepared for that. So we launched with wholesale, and it's just a different entry point. Our business has changed so much since then, and I've learned a lot about it. But yeah, it was something I was very timid about approaching and sort of like overwhelmed by in the beginning.
And how would you say it's changed since then? Or what has the process been in terms of becoming more focused on direct consumer and bringing on an agency to help you guys kind of acquire new customers online?
It's been a learning process. Now I'm all about it. Now I'm like, I don't even know if I barely want to do wholesale anymore. And now, I mean, post global pandemic, I think nobody even really knows what's going on with bricks and mortar retail and who will even come back from this. But it was, you know, it's one of those things when you're really small and you don't have a huge marketing budget, it's hard to crack the code because you're not really meeting those thresholds of having enough to look at in terms of analytics to give you the learnings that you need to follow. And I still sort of feel like we're in that boat a little bit, even though, you know, we do have like a reasonable monthly marketing budget for a small brand. But I think it was, yeah, it's hard when you're just getting started if you're bootstrapping, because you can only spend X amount per month, and you know, the algorithms and everything are not as effective if you're just like kind of, you know, throwing a couple little coins in the bucket every month. So, you know, it grew very organically. It was a lot of testing, trying, you know, my husband and I trying to be as involved in the creative part of it as possible, just so that, because, you know, we know we have a strong and beautiful brand, and that's why we were able to get into such great wholesalers so early on. And so that took us a little bit of time to realize too, that we need to, we're in the premium space, you know, like we need to be keepers of the brand on all of those touch points, and then figure out how to leverage people who really understand the analytics and the back end and the ROAS, and let us kind of keep the creative part of the equation close, so that, you know, we are creating a brand that, one is converting, and then two is also, feels cohesive and premium and luxury for our customers.
And speaking to the dynamics of trying to uphold the brand while also obviously finding a way to convert new customers, what do you feel like has been kind of one of the learning lessons that helped you guys find a path to success while exploring the new world of direct to consumer for your brand specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've always had beautiful photography, so we don't have to worry about that. And we have a lot of really cool, like, just women that I respect, creative women who are content creators or influencers or photographers that have been early to kind of jump in and pitch in and help. And everybody really we've involved ourselves with on that front, like in the influencer creative space, like has all been based on, you know, real relationships that take longer to cultivate, but, you know, we don't pay people to promote the product on Instagram or anything like that. Everything that we do is organic with some of the creative content contributors that we have. So that's been a really helpful part from the beginning, just to have, you know, people helping out, creating really beautiful collateral and videos and photos. And then, you know, doing some of that ourselves. And also, I think that part has always come easily to us. I think it's the like sales part, because I have a really good concept of what I want the brand to be and represent, and I feel like I am my customer. And Greg is a great designer. He's a beautiful, you know, he's designed tons of publications and books, but neither of us are like the really salesy, you know, okay, like you got to do this 20% promo. And then, so it's like the mechanics of the digital. We're not really marketing and sales based technical people. So finding the kind of best practices, the tricks, the low hanging fruit of like really selling. Cause I think neither of us are really like very salesy type people, and you have to be, you know, in that arena in particular. So that's been the part that we've had trouble balancing, was like, you know, making a really beautiful brand that we connected with, but also, you know, figuring out those nitty gritty hooks and how to drive sales, and like what you have to actually say in your ads, and how you actually have to, you know, develop the funnel, and all of that just didn't come naturally to us.
And so when you guys were at that point, did you start to look for outside expertise to kind of help guide you through that learning process, or has that just been trial and error for the most part?
No. We looked to somebody, and we found somebody through a recommendation, another female founder that I knew, and it just was one part of the equation that I just did not feel was best handled by us directly. That said, we work hand in hand with them really closely. And I think we found the balance of, you know, the creative and the analytical and who should really be doing what. So we've come a long way. It's just been a crazy, crazy learning curve, like in the last year. But now that I have my head around it more, I actually really like it.
What do you mean specifically? Like, what aspects of it do you find interesting?
Just like starting to understand the analytics. I mean, I still feel kind of like a troglodyte sometimes when I'm like, you know, in my analytics, but like understanding the basic concepts of it, it's empowering and it's fun because, you know, it's that instant feedback. You can tell what you're doing, if it's working or not, you know, pretty quickly. Whereas, you know, if you're running a wholesale business, you have this like relationship with your buyer and you kind of know what's selling, but you kind of don't. And you don't really know exactly what your customers are saying, but maybe you'll see like some reviews. It's just a lot more shooting in the dark. And it's fun to get the feedback, in real time, you know, for what you're putting out there. Like I love sending an email out and then seeing get, you know, the orders come through after I send out like a really good email. And I have trained my daughter to, I have the Shopify app on my phone and it makes the cha-ching noise. And every time it goes on, I love to like put it on and it's kind of like a video game. And when it goes cha-ching, my daughter's like, Mom got money. So it's just, you know, it's like that instant feedback and knowing like, okay, here's a strategy I'm going to do. I'm going to put it out there, whether it's like an email or an ad or whatever. And I get to know if it was effective or not. It's just such a empowering way to run your business as opposed to the murkiness of wholesale.
Yes. I think the instant feedback is so interesting for how brands develop and change over time to improve the way that they're doing things for the customers. What do you guys see in terms of new product development and kind of things moving forward? I know, especially now, people are shopping online more and more, and obviously wholesale has kind of taken a backseat for most brands. How are you feeling like that's going to affect the way that you guys do things moving forward?
I think for us, it's much more about creating content that is like relevant and ties everything in. So we have always been an at-home brand because our brand, you know, was really founded by me feeling very burnt out and just like feeling like the one thing I could always do for myself and commit to myself was that, you know, at the end of the day, I could get in a nice warm tub and I'd feel better. And I think Americans have an interesting relationship with bathing traditionally. A lot of cultures like understand that, you know, there's a lot of science behind bathing and its health benefits, both mentally and physically. And as Americans, we don't necessarily, like I did take a lot of baths as a kid, but you know, it wasn't, it's now sort of become this thing that, you know, we know that like wellness and bathing and the whole self-care Sunday thing that has grown out of nowhere in the last few years is really relevant to us. And then now, you know, it's funny because I'm doing a business accelerator program that started post-pandemic. It started in January and we're still doing it, though it's all switched to virtual. But when I first started talking about, you know, my pitch and talking about like, you know, this at-home routine, it was kind of like, oh yeah, that's cool. Like an at-home routine, like, you know, cozy and easy. And now it's like, oh, an at-home routine. Tell me more. I just think the bath or just the simple act of bathing is a very simple, easy thing anybody can do. And I'm a person who likes to eat healthy, and sometimes in my life I have periods of on and off of being into fitness, but this is just such a simple, easy thing that you can do for yourself. And as you know, part of our culture, we just don't have that necessarily built in. So we're just trying to give people really easy ways to take care of themselves at home, and, you know, light a candle and take a bath, or, you know, bring your podcasts in or bring your wine in or whatever it is that you need to do, and use your body oil afterwards and get into bed in your clean sheets. Like those little moments of feeling good and feeling like you're taking care of yourself really matter. And I think they matter now more than ever, since we're all various levels of crazy, you know, at any given day. So we want to, I think, and this is the kind of emotional part of it that we didn't get to tell in having a wholesale business, is we want to like bring those routines to life, make it easy, make it simple, give people ideas. You know, we sent out an email that was pre-coronavirus, but we created a really beautiful premium hand soap that's in this big glass bottle. And it's expensive, but again, it was created pre-pandemic. It has like floating calendula flower petals in it, and it's really pretty. And we sent this email out about like having a hand washing mantra. And that was like, you know, instead of singing happy birthday to yourself twice, like, why don't you instead tell yourself like a mantra that you want to hear again and again, that feels, you know, that you want to circulate in your mind at the time, instead of just like singing happy birthday or counting to 25 or whatever. So it's like finding those little strategies, or like telling somebody like, hey, this is how you use a dry brush, and then you get in the tub and then you follow up with a, you know, body oil or a moisturizer. And this is why a body oil is cleaner and like better for your skin than a moisturizer. And those kind of specific, like real things about how to take care of yourself, how to relax. But not coming from a place of like making it complicated, just trying to come from a place of making it really easy to digest and like just as simple as anybody wants it. I think that's becoming a huge part of like our future product pipeline and our direct strategy, because I think, you know, people, they want to learn these new ways of taking care of themselves, and they're realizing that it's essential. And we weren't all raised that way. I mean, I wasn't raised with my mom like taking me to the spa or getting massages or anything like that. So I kind of had to teach myself how to take care of myself in that way. So yeah, you know, we're trying to make our content really relevant, make it really, helpful, and just, you know, inspire women to take better care of themselves, but not in a way that's intimidating or, you know, looking down on anybody for like not doing something right. It's just trying to kind of meet people where they are.
And if you look back like on starting the business, is there any like any lessons that you've learned or piece of advice that you would give yourself at the beginning if you could go back?
Yeah, I think I was probably irrationally scared to start my own business and like didn't think I could do it, and definitely have imposter syndrome, which a lot of female founders that I talk to also struggle with. Not everybody, but especially the financial side, the business side, the analytic side, all of those things I felt really intimidated by. I probably should have done it earlier. I probably should have, you know, thrown myself into it quicker. And, you know, it is really intimidating, as a female founder, you know, not having like a business background. And if you are a conservative, cautious person, like I am, and I definitely used to be, you know, you just have so many doubts in your head and so many reasons that things could go wrong.
I also think like for you, being somebody that bootstrapped a business with your own money and resources, it's definitely, you're playing in a game where the feedback loops are small, and they also are extremely important in the short term and the long term. I think some like other ways of launching a business, you might not feel those things for longer if you do have a longer horizon. But for you and somebody that did bootstrap it, like those small movements affect your life so closely that you feel everything a bit more.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm now, it's so funny because I, you know, I'm in this program and I'll talk like in my deck, my investor deck about like, you know, my COGS and my margins and all of that stuff. And I'm like, oh, I know my margins and I know my COGS because I watch, you know, because it's my money and I watch every single dollar that goes out and I pay attention to the costs of everything because, you know, I'm not just spending somebody else's money. It's literally like my money that I worked very hard to save. So, yeah, it was scary, but it's really empowering, I think. And just like knowing that even if you, you know, I'm in my 30s, like just knowing that it's not too late to start something and that you can totally learn things quickly and you can learn on the go. And like now these things that I was scared of before I really like. So like I really like my analytics now and I really like, you know, figuring out my cash flow and all of those things have become fun. Not that I'm that great at them, but at least, you know, now that I've embraced them and, you know, you're just never too old to do that kind of stuff. You can learn lots of new stuff. And, you know, I was surprised.
And you said that you're in an accelerator program now. Are you looking like what are the next kind of phases that you see for the business? Are you looking to raise money to kind of scale the growth of the brand, or what has that been like being a part of an accelerator, and what do you feel like you've gotten and learned from that experience?
Yeah, it's been super helpful. This is a CPG based accelerator. So there's a lot of really helpful input. I'm the only one really in my space, in the beauty space. Everybody else is more in like the food and supplements and wellness space. But it's great because it gives you a real curriculum, and they have had a lot of really great people, really great mentors involved. And I love having mentor type people around who can give me advice and, you know, are, you know, more experienced and have more perspective than I do. So that's really been great. And then since this whole pandemic, it's been weird because it went from being an in-person thing to a completely virtual thing. But it's also been really nice to have the support of everybody else and kind of all of us as founders, you know, with small brands all sort of at the stage of the seed round stage, but like with growing businesses, it's been really helpful just to have the kind of support and camaraderie of the mentors and of the other entrepreneurs. But yeah, we are going to be looking, I mean, it's very uncertain. I'm always looking and reading different things about what investors are going to do and, you know, what the real implications are going to be for the rest of this year, at least. And so we are looking for a seed round, not quite yet. Thankfully our business, ever since the outbreak started, our direct sales have been growing month on month since February. So we're actually doing really well. I think that our messaging is resonating, and, you know, we found some ways so that we can keep shipping, you know, throughout this. So we're in a good place. And actually it was a hit not having the wholesale business. Just was like poof, 1 week. It was like orders canceled. Nobody's writing back. No, you know, invoices not paid. I still have a lot of accounts receivable, which also is really hard as a small business, but we're actually like seeing momentum, and I feel like we're riding this wave right now. So, you know, we're not rushing to anything. One, because we don't know what's going on and nobody else does, but two, also we're doing okay in terms of cash flow, and hopefully some of the government assistance programs will help stabilize it even more. So yeah, it's, you know, we're going to do a seed round. And I just mostly it's really about growing our team just so that we can start to scale and start to scale the marketing efforts and start to scale brand awareness and just getting everything up a notch. And also, you know, me and Greg still do a lot of, we're still like the, our own interns. It would be, I really look forward to the day that, you know, I'm not personally writing back to customers or, you know, running to the post office and all of the other little things that we do, especially since our family is going to be doubling in terms of kids soon. So.
And do you have anything coming up, like product wise or marketing, that you guys are really excited about for later this year?
Yeah, we have a pregnancy product. So it's one that I've always wanted to launch. And then when I had my second pregnancy, I was like, okay, this is the time to do it because I'm living and breathing in this space. So we have a special body oil that's organic, low scent, a little bit higher moisture than our other body oil products. And so we're launching that later this week, actually. And that's exciting. And, you know, it's funny too, because pregnancy doesn't really, it's not, there's, it's on its own timeline. So, coronavirus or not, it's, you know, pregnant women still need to take care of their skin and, you know, practice self-care. So that I'm really excited about. And it's fun to also be, again, be my own consumer and, like, you know, the picky, I always say I'm like the pickiest pregnant woman because I have dealt with like a lot of sickness and nausea and aches and pains. I'm like the most complainy type of pregnant woman. But I feel like it's helped me create a really good product for other pregnant moms. And then we also are launching a body tool, which is something that I'm really excited about because it's actually not, we have a couple body tools in our lineup, but this is one that was actually inspired by ancient Greek and Roman like bathhouse practices. And they're kind of the first people to use aromatic plants and, you know, have this like kind of spa and bathhouse culture. So we kind of reinterpreted this old body tool for a modern customer, and it's something for cleansing and for like cleansing and exfoliating, basically. But I think it's going to be fun because it's a new product. It's very analog.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, and I think again, it's like, it's tapping into like what we all kind of need right now. So I'm excited, you know, especially as like cleanliness and hygiene and bathing and all these things are more top of mind than ever right now. So I'm excited to get it out there. We definitely are going to need to create some great content because it's a new thing and it will take some education, but, it's also very simple. So yeah, we're excited. We have some cool stuff coming out on the horizon.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and giving your story of how you launched the brand. I'm excited to see the new product come out, and also I'm curious to hear how the rest of the accelerator program goes.
Bread receipt.